Welcome back to Cool Science Radio. I'm Lynn Ware Peake, here with John Wells. Our guest this morning is astrophysicist Mario Livio. He's the author of 6 books and over 400 scientific articles. He worked for 24 years with the Hubble Space Telescope. He joined us previously on Cool Science Radio to discuss several of his books, Brilliant Blunders and Why. He joins us now to discuss his new book, Galileo and the Science Deniers. Now, while we may think that science deniers are a modern-day affliction interwoven with politics and religion, it turns out this is not a new phenomenon. In fact, 400 years ago, Galileo encountered the same problem. Mario Livio, welcome to Cool Science Radio. Great to have you.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's very interesting, as you say, that Galileo reached his bold new conclusions about the cosmos and the laws of nature by following the evidence wherever it took him. And I found that interesting. If you follow the science and you follow the evidence, you must be very open-minded because it could lead you to a conclusion that you hadn't previously anticipated or hadn't previously hoped for.
That is correct. And not only that, to conclusions that contradict beliefs that have been held for centuries in the case of Galileo.
Yes, we know some about Galileo, and we know that he encountered a lot of obstinance, and in fact, his books were censored and or disallowed by the church, for example. His goal was to spread science to the masses, and which is interesting. We like to think we're doing that on Cool Science Radio, and it's what you're doing with the books that you publish. And so tell us how Galileo how he went about trying to share science and scientific evidence.
Yeah, he was a master publicist in that sense, certainly a master in outreach. So one thing that he did, you know, all scientists at the time were publishing their books in Latin only. But Latin was spoken by relatively few, you know, it was an elite that spoke Latin. So he started publishing his books from a certain point in Italian, so that, you know, all educated people will be able to read them. In addition, when he did his discoveries with the telescope, you know, things he saw on the moon, mountains and craters, the satellites of Jupiter and so on, he managed to convince the Tuscan court to fund the construction of telescopes. He was building his own telescopes, and then to send those telescopes all across Europe to influential people together with instructions on how to use them so that the people could see with their own eyes the discoveries that he has made.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with Mario Livio, who has written Galileo and the Science Deniers. Mario, I wanted to ask you about the spyglass that became the telescope that you were just speaking of. It was invented roughly in 1606 in the Netherlands. As you point out in your book, it was not invented by Galileo. And it was originally as a spyglass for, you know, maybe military purposes or spying on your adversaries, those sorts of things. And Galileo improved it, and he also pointed it towards the skies. But before we go there, how significant as a technology was this achievement? What did it mean for our European ancestors?
It was extraordinarily significant, especially because of, you know, this was in some sense, you know, what today we would call a quantum leap. Until then, all evidence, a collection of evidence and, you know, was based on what you could perceive with your senses. So what you could see with your eyes, you could feel, you could smell, and so on. Here came a device that enhanced the power of your senses. And the claim was that what you see with it is still a true representation of the real world. And so that in itself was at the beginning a difficulty for Galileo, because you see, people could legitimately at some level ask, you know, how do we know that what we see through this telescope represents reality and it is not something that some artifact that the telescope is producing.
Yeah, that's correct. And the original spyglass was, I think, four times magnification. He increased that to 20 power, which probably without doing that, he would not have seen those four moons that were circling Jupiter. So he really sort of changed the game, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. He did this to even a little bit more than 20 power. But and he did this on his own. I mean, you know, he constructed the telescopes using at the beginning tubes from, organs and polishing his own lenses and putting them at both sides. He achieved a telescope that very few had at the time. And that actually also was, at the beginning, it annoyed him because some people said, whoa, he tries to sell us something that was invented elsewhere and you can buy on the street. But you couldn't buy on the street Galileo's telescopes.
Obviously, Galileo achieved great notoriety and credibility. I mean, he was funded by some of the highest powers. And when he took his telescopes and showed what he was seeing through his telescopes, at what point did his message get twisted such that he encountered great opposition?
Yeah, so it's not that his message got twisted. It was, you see, very often it is described as if Galileo's clash with the church was a clash between science and religion. And it really wasn't that. I mean, Galileo was himself a religious person. It wasn't a clash with religion. What he objected to is literal interpretations of biblical texts. Basically, he was arguing, look, the Bible was not written as a science book. The fact is that, for example, the planets are not even named in the Bible. And, you know, he made this powerful statement which say that he did not believe that the same God who has given us our senses and reason and intelligence wished us to abandon their use. So basically he said, look, you should do observations and experiments. And when there is an apparent conflict between a literal interpretation of the Bible and what observations tell you, it simply means you didn't understand correctly and your interpretation was not right because it was not written as a science book. It was written for the common people to understand. So his observations immediately conflicted, literal texts, like in the book of Joshua, it said that at Joshua's request, God commanded the sun to stand still. So this was seen as evidence that the sun is moving and it's not the earth is moving. And Galileo was arguing, no, that's how it is written so that you understand it because that's how it looks to you, but really it is the earth that's moving.
That is so interesting that in essence, he was trying to help along those who believed in the Bible to just see the difference between when we ought to take something as a metaphor and apply it to our lives versus something literal. And as we know, many people throughout the ages, if we were able to take walking on water or parting the seas as a metaphor, we might actually question the Bible less.
Correct. In some sense, he was trying to, maybe that was not exactly his intention, but it may have been part of his intention to save the church actually from making a mistake. Because, you see, he was sure that he was right. And he was, in some sense, suggesting, look, some point down the line, somebody will take again this observations and the literal interpretation, see that there is a discrepancy and conclude that the Bible is false, while that is not the case. He in fact stated, very strongly, the Bible cannot err, he said. If there is a difference, it is because we misinterpret the text there.
Well, it's interesting, 400 years later, and people are still saying my science book is the Bible. I don't need anything else. So it's still an interesting conversation, isn't it?
It is to me I must say, amazing that we still have sometimes a conversation like this 400 years later, and not only 400 years later, but after two popes, Pope John Paul II and Pope Francis, you know, declared specifically that Galileo was right and the theologians who relied on literal interpretations were wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Well, brings us to the trial of 1634, and he had this publication, Diago, I hope I pronounced that correctly, where he tried to present arguments for and against the Copernican model. I think he was trying to be very careful that he wasn't actually teaching the Copernican model, because after all, Bruno was burned at the stake back in 1600. You've got to be careful with the Pope, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, you know, about 17 years before his trial, he was actually given an injunction not to teach and or hold or defend in any way the Copernican model in which all the planets revolve around the sun. He relied on a somewhat softer letter he got from the chief cardinal that said only that he was not allowed to hold that opinion, but not that he couldn't teach that or defend it. Still, in that book that you mentioned, you know, the dialogue on the two chief world systems, as known in Italian usually as the dialogo, most of the text of the book, he really strongly advocates Copernicanism, but he understood that he wouldn't be able to publish the book like this because he had to get permission to print. So he added the preface and the conclusion, which seemed to say, well, actually, we cannot really tell exactly. But that, unfortunately, didn't fool anybody, because still most of the text defended Copernicanism very strongly. So he was put on trial.
Wow.
What did his trial consist of? I mean, we know that he refused to renounce his findings. Take us through that.
Yeah, so you see, one could argue that to convict him, he was convicted eventually of being vehemently suspected of heresy. Had he been, by the way, convicted of heresy, he would have been burnt at the stake, like Giordano Bruno. But he was convicted of being vehemently suspected of heresy. This was truly, you know, in today's terms, it was an assault on intellectual freedom. There is no other way of saying this, because, you know, suppose even his model was wrong. So what? I mean, his model did not hurt anybody, nor did it incite anybody else to hurt somebody. So he was entitled to his own opinion. But he did, break that injunction that was put on him 17 years earlier. So, you know, in that respect, the church was justified in finding him guilty of vehemently suspected of heresy. He also did not tell the people who gave him the permission to print the book about that injunction. The sad end of it was that he was forced on his knees to abjure and say that he detests everything that he has done. He basically was asked to recant much of his life's work. And that does remain as one of the most, I would say, shameful scenes in terms of attack on intellectual freedom.
So this attack on intellectual freedom, no doubt you are also drawing parallels to modern day science, specifically within climate change. And as we know, there are science deniers within climate change. Many agree that actually the climate is changing. The sources of that are different. The economy and the politics surrounding it makes very different faces and different perspectives and different ways of dealing with climate change. And this is one of the parallels that you're drawing in the book. Can you take us there for just a moment?
Yeah. So as I said, the science denial in Galileo's time had really more to do with the difference between what science was telling us and literal interpretations of the Bible. Today, the motivations for science denial are different. In the case, for example, of climate change, it's mostly political conservatism, and the fact that we are in an election year and things of that nature. So various political or partisan motivations. There are other areas where we see science denial. Unfortunately, even in the current COVID-19 pandemic, the early response to this pandemic was to deny that there is a very serious problem. You know, statements like, we only have 15 cases and soon it is going to be down to zero, instead of, you know, immediately starting taking steps, unfortunately cost lives. If you look at the difference between the response, let's say, in South Korea, which is a country of more than 50 million people, the ratio of number of deaths to per million people of population there is 5. In the US, it's something like 264. So these things do have consequences. Yeah. So the motivation is very different, but the results sometimes, unfortunately, are very similar.
Mario, Albert Einstein once wrote, and this is in your book, that he's the father, that Galileo is the father of modern physics, indeed of modern science together. What influence did Galileo have on Einstein's relativity?
Oh, Galileo had a huge influence. I mean, one of the things that Galileo did was to understand that motions are relative. And even today we call transformation of, you know, from one moving frame to another moving frame, Galilean transformation. And this was formed the part of Einstein's theory of special relativity. So this was an immense influence. In addition, Galileo is the father of modern science in the sense that, you know, he's the person who established that experiments and observations and then reasoning based on the data are the only way to obtain facts about nature. And plus, he introduced the mathematization of physics. He stated, you know, in one place that the universe is written in the language of mathematics. And this, of course, is what today we do. You know, all the laws of physics are expressed as mathematical equations. So in this sense, too, he is the father of modern science.
Mario, you extensively researched for this book. What most surprised you about Galileo as you researched this? And what one question were you not able to answer about Galileo that you'd like to answer?
Well, I think that really at the end, what surprised me the most was to what extent science denial then and now still exist. I mean, it is amazing to me that, as I mentioned, you know, even the Pope now agreed that Galileo was right, and we still encounter these situations. You know, even the religiosity as a motivation for science denial still exists. Not so much in the case of climate change, but for example, in cases where people want to teach creationist idea next to Darwinian evolution in science classes, not in history classes or something else. So that really, you know, I didn't understand to what extent there is that similarity. Now, questions I tried to answer, this just became a little bit like an obsession for me, whether he ever actually said, and yet it moves, more of it. And so I spent a whole year researching that. And eventually, I cannot say 100%, but I can say that almost certainly, even though he absolutely thought that way, I think he never actually said it. Well, he certainly didn't say it to the Inquisition. Everybody knew that. But as far as I can tell, I don't think he actually used these precise words ever, even though there is no doubt that he thought that way. Because what that expression says, or that motto, it says, well, in spite of what you may think, these are the facts.
Right.
Mario, you mentioned before that Galileo wrote in Italian instead of Latin so that his information, his findings could be shared with the masses, but you also said with those who were educated. And I'm wondering, is science only for the educated?
One thing that I concluded is, you know, some people ask me, so how do you think we can fight science denial? And I think that there is really only one way, and that's the following. You see, there are many studies that show that once you're an adult and formed a strong opinion, it is extremely difficult to change opinions, even if you are presented with contradictory facts. So the only way really is to start from, you know, little children and with the education system. And by that, I don't mean that everybody needs to be a scientist. Absolutely not. I mean, we need humanists, we need artists, we need everybody. But everybody needs to learn a certain appreciation of science and understand that there are such things, for example, a laws of nature, which the entire universe appears to obey, and things of that nature, and understand that science is all around us and that we depend on it. It's not only that our life expectancy today is twice what it was at Galileo's time, but it is also the case that, you know, we hold, let's say, in our hand, you know, a phone, which is a computer that's more powerful than the computer that landed people on the moon. So all of these people need this appreciation of science. And for that, they don't need to learn and be educated as scientists. They just need to be given this background.
Well put. Well, the book is Galileo and the Science Deniers, a wonderful book. Mario Livio is our guest. Mario, thank you so much for joining us again on Cool Science Radio. It's been great to have you.
Thank you again.
All right. Thank you, Mario. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you. So did it sound okay?
Yeah.
Sound was fine, yes?
Yep, I didn't hear any lawn mowing or hammering or anything during that time.
Okay.
So
okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Mario. And John, I want to ask you to stay on the line for just a minute.
I just want to ask Mario a quick question. Mario, I know that Dr. Chazon has retired. Is he still involved in astrophysics, or is he out completely?
I actually don't know, to be honest. I mean, I haven't seen him in, now maybe at least 5 years or so.
Yeah.
So I really don't know. I mean, you know that he moved to the Boston area. He was involved with Tufts and so on.
Yes.
And I visited him there once or twice. But in recent years, I haven't seen him. So I really don't know.
He was one heck of a professor. What a lecturer. He was fantastic.
That's good. Okay.
Mario, here's my burning question.
Yeah.
With a name, I've read that you're Israeli-American, but your name is very Italian.
Yeah, some four generations back.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Bye.